Extra, extra read
Batcha me, I batcha you, and everything goes crazy. Ba, ba, batcha me, bambino, ba, ba, bo, 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 ca, piccolino, when you kiss me, and I'ma kiss you. Tra la 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 loo.
Well, hello, everyone. And the boys are back once again, back together, all four of us, on a Titans Extra. That's the first time, right?
Yep.
Johnny and Pete have been holding the extra fort down, and now Kelly and I have come home on the extra show. And now you might be wondering, what is Parv doing back? I said I would take a month off, I am still in my month off, but something very exciting happened, and this is the reason that we are gathered here to cheer. Kelly, do you want to explain what has happened that has brought us the four of us back together for this special recording?
Yeah, well, a couple days ago, out of nowhere, seemingly, on the PWO board, Matt D, famous poster on PWO.
Let's not give him that much credit. I mean,
I think that's fair.
Notorious poster. Notorious.
Yeah, that's probably a better adjective.
Mysterious poster.
Yeah. Weirdo.
He posted.
Go on, Johnny, bury him. No, I'm joking.
ADD.
Yeah, poster. There we go.
That too. He's like me. He's got all these nicknames and stuff. So anyway.
He'll always be Little Matt D. To me.
That's a nice obscure reference, that one.
So Matt D posted a link to a YouTube channel that just came up, I believe, in the last week or so. That is the Chicago Film Archives presents Wrestling from Chicago YouTube channel. And basically what they've uploaded is so far about 80 matches from the 1950s from what was, I think, for quite a while on the old Dumont network, a famous TV show in the 50s, a wrestling show from Chicago. So the footage is in great condition. It's also a lot or mostly of matches that prior to this past week were not very widely available at all. Pete, you may have a bit more information on that aspect.
Some of them were, I mean, some of them have been available, but not widely circulated. Like, I believe the Vern Gagne-Lou Fez one was something that only, like, diehard collectors had access to. And I know they got it via Tokyo, and I don't even think it was English dubbed. I think it was with the Japanese commentary.
Yeah, well, right. There is one compilation, which was available called The History, or was it called The Encyclopedia of Pro Wrestling?
Yeah.
And the four of us have actually, we've been planning, I would say, for going on 10 months, or maybe even a year. Yeah, maybe even since we first started doing the show. We wanted to do a show in the 1950s.
And what's funny is when we were talking about that, it was a matter of not only going, well, there's so little footage. There was so much footage that really sort of proved that old point of like, oh, well, you know, for the most part, that 50s wrestling kind of sucks. And then this came out. Yeah. And wow, eyes reopened, and it's also I believe it wasn't just in great condition. What wasn't a lot of it remastered? Someone actually took the time to remaster this. Yeah, stuff.
I mean it's in much superior. Like some of these matches are on that Encyclopedia of Pro Wrestling thing, which is dubbed in Japanese. But the video quality is vastly superior here. It looks like it's being remastered from the original tapes or digitized. You know. Fantastic quality. Anyway, carry on, Kelly.
Fantastic quality. But, you know, the main thing is we have matches, like full-length matches with some of the great workers from that era. Fez has been mentioned. Vern Gagne, of course. We're going to get into that. Buddy Rogers, Hans Schmidt.
When did he start being called Gagne? I always thought it was Gagne.
Gagne. It's Gagne. He's Canadian. Come on.
That's how Canadians.
So we're talking about Vern Gagne, not his illegitimate twin brother, Vern Gagne.
Anyway, yeah, so there's tons just right now, you know, there's so many that I'm interested in seeing, like, and prior to that there had been some, you know, full length lengthy 50s matches kicking about, but a lot of them were just, you know, like 5 minute clip jobs, stuff like that. So now we got some serious footage to get into. And
And it's really exciting. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when I saw that stuff, I was like, my initial reaction was like, holy shit, some of this stuff, you know. I mean, like, let's say even there were, you know, some of those matches were knocking around before. Not all of them had been. And then, you know, there were some really weird things, like Angelo Poffo matches. How many Angelo Poffo matches from the 50s have you seen before? You know, it's kind of...
It's not a guy I've actually searched, because I, you know, but you know, it's cool that it's there. Like for me, I'm an hour draw mark. I love watching guys work broadways, and because I want to see what they're able to do and take up what they're able to do with the time, and being able to see Fez and Gagne, Buddy Rogers and Fez, or two of the draws off the top of my head I remember seeing on the listings. It just makes me water. And one of them are, we're going to look at Fez and Gagne, or as Kelly says, Gagne.
That's the correct pronunciation.
Yeah. when he toured Canada. So I'm just like, you know, really, really, these are guys where we've seen clips or seen a little bit of this or that, maybe 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here, but now we're able to see them and really work matches in a great, you know, with Fred Kohler, I believe, was the promoter there in Chicago at the time. And it's just stuff, I just can't wait to sink my teeth into some of this stuff.
You know, one of the things that grabbed me when I watched, and I watched it earlier, was, you know, I've read the name heard the name Wilbur Snyder like so many times, and and I always just pictured in my mind some grizzled up, farmer looking character, because that's, we hear Wilbur Snyder, you know, I mean, it sounds like a hillbilly gimmick, you know, almost. And then they introduce him and he's this big, handsome, you know, fucking star, you know, like, and a great wrestler. And damn, you know.
Yeah, even seeing Vern with hair was like almost like you're taking
it
back. Because all the footage you've seen him wrestle shitloads of time, but bald. And now he has a nice little, like, I think that's Jerry. I think that's parva-proofed hair right there. I mean, that was a pompadour if I ever saw one, right?
Yep.
He had nice hair, so basically, this is essentially a kind of taster show. We're going to do a longer format, you know, full Titans of Wrestling episode on this footage. But we wanted to kind of capture our excitement, I guess, and just look at a couple of matches before we doing the full-fledged thing.
Which is translated into it, we wanted to be the first podcast to jump on this thing.
Let's face it, Johnny, we still might be the only ones who do.
I haven't seen something get this many smarks this excited, you know, in the longest time, where everyone's just salivating.
This is ridiculous.
I keep waiting for some people to shit on it because they don't understand it and they're looking through modern eyes. You know, they're like, I don't understand why the referee did, or why did he do this? He should have waited.
I think that may be already underway at PWO, but I'm not entirely sure yet.
Yes.
I've already read people bashing Russ.
I saw YouTube comments of Russ bashing.
I don't read YouTube comments.
No, well, there was one comment, and it was a knock on Russ.
I read something, I go, I expected something sounding professional. He's so snarky. He's like Tony Schiavone in WCW 2000. I was like, oh, shut the fuck up.
Man, I was marking out for his calls and stuff. I thought he combined comedy, like when he was calling the Haystacks Buddy Rogers matches that I'm actually going to be looking at. I thought he called comedy well. He did comedy. He called serious with the world title hour draw that we see with Gagne and Fez, and he did play by play. He was like a combination of Jim Ross, Lance Russell, and Bobby Heenan. I mean, he was able to do it all. And he had a tranquil voice. I thought he was great.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about Russ in a second, but before we get into our first match here, I do want to say I was pleasantly surprised by the general reaction of people on PWO, which wasn't to say, oh, you know, that's nice. Everybody immediately wanted to dive into the footage, which I think is really good to see in a way. It's not like everybody thought, oh, you know, it's nice that historical stuff is there. Everybody actually wants to dig through it and watch it and, you know, look at the matches on their own terms. And I think that's a healthy...
I think it's cool, but I think Pro Wrestling Only is probably like the number one website that analyzes footage ad nauseum. So I didn't find it surprising. I was surprised by the bulk of people jumping already in on it this quickly. I was expecting people to be even more excited than they really were to be able to watch some of this stuff. And I just think it's funny that, you know, some of these historians have been hoarding this stuff for years, have now just got to be feel like, God, just either they're super pissed or ashamed of themselves to do this to a public that enjoys the same hobby they do.
That's
fucking great.
They've been swerved, Pete, by the Chicago Film Archive.
Exactly. Yeah, because even some of them are like, there's no way they're uploading. They're like shocked that these people are uploading it for free, you know, when they can make a buck off it.
That's the funniest thing. You know, even over, you know, at DVDVR, you know, which a lot of people are like, oh, let go, it's not what it used to be. It's been almost all just positives and everyone jumping in on it, and like Dean coming out of posting retirement to go nuts about this stuff and everything. And it's all been positive there, too.
Cool.
Excellent. All right, well, we just picked two matches. This being Titans, the first one had to be Haystack Calhoun versus Buddy Rogers. I think you and I, Kelly, had the same thing. That one jumped out a mile to me because...
Oh, yeah. I think it was the first one I noticed, to be honest.
A young Haystack Calhoun.
Yeah.
Where he's actually mobile and we can, you know... Cause, I mean, how much... Like, I've seen some Calhoun matches before, but it's little clips here and there. I don't remember seeing too many full matches of his.
Well, he's going to be on some of the footage we watch for the WWF stuff eventually.
Yeah, I've seen that he crops up there. But, he's pretty old by that point, right? He's kind of like...
And mostly in tag matches or battle royals by that point.
I
gotta admit, I at first thought we were only watching that match, and I was like having a kidney. My mind was just being blown away.
I had to talk you back from the ledge.
Yeah, I was on the ledge. I was like, you bastards, why are we watching this potential shit fest of all the filet mignons we could pick? We picked fucking cow tongue to watch off the bat.
Well, you know,
and then Kelly explained, oh, I thought we were watching two. Okay, then it's fine. Okay, I can live through one. I thought we were gonna open up the, you know, lead off first base, or open up with the 50s podcast, and we go with freaking Haystack Calhoun.
Well, I think about it when you went to the movies, even still in the 50s. Like one of you guys said, you got a cartoon before the main movie.
Yeah, I'm fine with this as long as we got both, so I can live with both.
So, okay, well. Does somebody want to take it away on this? What did we, any initial impressions of the Chicago Amphitheater and the presentation and the announcer? Johnny, what were your initial thoughts here?
Number one, we need to initiate dress codes for wrestling events now, and everyone has to wear suits. because that's just looks so cool.
We should all wear suits doing the podcast.
I know, we should be.
Class up this joint, man.
You know, we should be in a haze of smoke, you know. And...
What do you mean you guys don't?
But okay, so they're introducing the participants to the match, and you got Bobby Davis, the manager of Buddy Rogers, who looks doesn't really do anything, but he looks sufficiently douchebaggery-ish. So, young Haystacks is a handsome man.
Well, I mean,
facially, okay, facially, he's a good-looking dude.
Now, not to interrupt you here, Johnny, but do you guys feel that Bobby Heenan took a lot of Bobby Davis look from him? He looks pretty similar, you know? He looks a lot like him, you know?
Heenan grew up going to matches in Chicago.
That's Chicago,
so
that's
true.
Pretty good chance, that's true. Mm.
But yeah, you look at young Haystacks. I mean, all I know of Haystacks is the stuff I've seen, and, you know, he's just some big, scraggly, fat guy. But here he's like, you know, he's got a baby face, and... he's got what we call a hipster beard now. And he can move. I mean, he's round. I mean, he has his own orbit. But and he's in his overalls, you can see, have elastic bands on the sides so they can stretch and never pop. And then you got Buddy Rogers just looking like a star and just being awesome. You know, he's got his movie star hair. Mm-hmm. And... Yep. Sneer and his attitude, and then Russ Davis, our announcer, we'll get into it. He's so awesome. He's never, and you're right. This was obviously more of a comedy type match, so he's going to be funny, and he's putting on that old Southern type of voice there when he talks about Brother Haystacks, Brother Calhoun, and he's got that 50s announcer cadence that's very, very inviting and kind of sucks you in, and he just gives Calhoun's married. And it takes a half a pound of butter and three pigs and dozen eggs,
loaf of bread.
And then he goes, he's a big guy. His wife is too.
Yeah, awesome.
He can't travel in a car. You know, he's brought to the matches in a trailer. And back then a trailer wasn't like, you know, a nice trailer. They're probably like a horse trailer.
Yeah.
And he's like, and you didn't even get to see the forklift to put him in the ring, folks.
Awesome.
He has this folksy demeanor when he's calling this match.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when he's like beating up a buddy, and he's going, and Haystack's going, take that, you little sharecropper.
Like a sharecropper.
At one point, because he's got like a couple of different voices he uses. I was wondering if there were two guys in the booth. I was like, "Is there a color guy there?" No. He's just got two. He's just got two or three different accents. He likes to switch in and out. Of.
He's amazing. He is a pure example of the golden age of television and what when TV was a relatively new medium, and the guys who got it, you know, and he's amazing. He also when he's Haystacks is working the arm. And he's like, if you didn't get to hear what Brother Haystacks had to say, he said, I'm a-pumping him. He goes, I wonder if he's ever heard of a cholesterol problem.
Yes.
at one point, they announced that the Blackhawks are beating the Red Wings.
They did it twice.
I heard it once, and boy, did that pop the crowd.
Yeah.
I was like,
why? Yeah.
It was the Stanley Cup Finals that year. Yeah, and the Blackhawks ended up winning. That was actually, I looked, like, I was curious. I was like, which game are they talking about? And it was game 5, and the Blackhawks won 6-3, and they won, they finished the series in game 6 and won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and Russ Davis even mentions, hey, it's great, the Blackhawks are winning, you know?
Yeah.
It was,
Do you think, because one of my thoughts, do you think Rogers and Haystacks, or Rogers in particular, was a little bit kind of like, hold on, this is taking away from our heat here. This is distracting from
not
our...
at all.
No?
No, now if he was wrestling like a real wrestler, not a gimmick wrestler, I think he might have been taken aback a little bit. But I don't think in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, you know what? And I don't really think these guys back then thought about stuff like that. Like, you know, like, hey, you're taking away, because they know, you know, this is, you know, it's very important. That's what they did at all sporting events back then.
I guarantee CM Punk would love if when he was wrestling to have Black Ops scores announced over the internet.
Well, but back then they always did that. They didn't just have a big like scoreboards to show you what the scores were over the other games. They would announce stuff in the middle of stuff if it was important.
Yeah, yep. It's good that they're not in a bubble where it's just saying they don't want you to know there's something else going on. I mean, you already bought the tickets, so they might as well keep the fans. It's like we have a thing called ACL every year here in Austin. It's Austin City Limits, and it's also during the Red River Shootout, which is UT Oklahoma, and they'll put up tents for the UT game so people can watch and go listen to their music and stuff. So.
Right. Great. Well, Pete, do you want to break this one down for us?
I didn't break it down too much, but just because it was a comedy match and it was fun. I mean, Haystack looks like every other hillbilly we've seen with the big horseshoe but just massive. I mentioned how awesome it was that they call out the Blackhawks scores during the matches. Hey, I thought Haystack's punches pretty much sucked. Those were some hideous. And the announcer wasn't Russ Davis wasn't bullshitting either, because he called Haystack's out on it and mentioned how dreadful those punches were, which gives him credibility. I mean, sometimes you shouldn't ignore things, but when they're that bad, sometimes you really got to call it out. And there were some fun. What,
Pete? If that was Gorilla Monsoon, you'd be calling him out on it.
I said sometimes. I didn't say every time. Okay.
All right.
When they're that bad, and these are pretty bad. I thought it was really fun watching Rogers try to escape Calhoun's headlock and stuff. So that was some interesting stuff. The freaking finish where Calhoun goes through the ropes and breaks him.
Holy shit.
To the floor. It's almost like, I'm like, man, that was that gimmicked? And I want to say yes, because everything in wrestling is meant to do for a reason. But part of me is like, man, he's a big man.
Yeah.
He's a pretty fat fucker. That could have been by accident. But I think it was planned finish.
I think the ropes were not gimmicked.
Okay. I'm going to go with not gimmicked, too. He was supposed to get, of course, drop kicked through the ropes and knocked out. That was the finish. I think it just was a coincidence that the rope snapped. Really,
I'll even things up here. I think that it seemed like it came way too easily out of the turnbuckle, which suggested that the screw had been loosened on purpose for that to happen.
It was the last match of the night. This was the main event, so it'd been roughed up.
Yeah, you guys were exactly. They weren't exactly bouncing off the ropes back then. These things were just kind of
the hot debates here on Titans X.
I wouldn't call it a great match or anything, but that was fun. And I thought Rogers showed a lot of charisma and did what he could with Calhoun, who was pretty limited. He wasn't fast. He was big man, and Rogers played off him, stooged real well for him. And really, it makes you want to see Rogers with like a real wrestler,
Kelly, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I've been itching to see Haystack's Calhoun come to Titans of Wrestling, and here he is. Well, Titans Extra, technically, but
get technical about it.
If you want to get technical about it, the draw was that this was like super young. Haystack. Actually, he was just Haystack, singular Calhoun, not Haystacks yet.
I noticed that. Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah.
He hadn't acquired multiple Haystacks.
He hasn't earned the vowel yet, or the apostrophe S.
I mean, he is noticeably slighter than he would be in the 1970s. It was nice to see a match like this. It'd been a while since I've seen like a good big man, small man. A sort of comedy sort of match like this. So it was fun. The crowd loved it. You can see, how Buddy was, why he's the legend, because he was a great heel, a great worker. And the finish, I loved the rope snap finish. That was cool. And Davis, like, giving updates like, oh, he's a bloody mess, or Calhoun's a bloody mess on the floor.
He's bleeding like a fountain. You might as well just call it. Might as well just announce it to the people.
But we don't once see actually if he is bleeding or not. And
didn't they say they're getting the emergency? Like the
we need to get an ambulance. Yeah, we need to get.
Yeah.
And then obviously they're gonna need a forklift too to get him up. He needed one to get into the ring.
I was hoping it actually went that far that a forklift did come down and picked up Haystack and took him to the back.
But boy, did he like he didn't just like kind of like slowly fat tumble.
No,
through
that
the
was
ropes.
A great bump.
Flew, tumbled. That's why I was like, damn.
How do you think old Haystack Calhoun here compares to Uncle Elmer? Better worker?
Oh, God, a million times better, I think.
Yeah, but then again, I don't know if we've seen that. We've never seen Uncle Elmer work like a Ric Flair or someone like that ilk. It helps
true.
Have
I've seen him work Jerry Daniel. Lawler. I've seen him work Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
We saw him work the Freebirds, Pete.
Yeah. Well, I'll take Bud Rogers over the Birds.
One of my big questions, this was just a taster, and there's quite a lot of Buddy Rogers, which is one of the things that excites me.
Oh yeah,
a lot. And one of the things I was thinking was how much of Flair can you see in the Rogers character?
Tons.
And I thought that yes. Basically, yes. You could see a lot of the Flair character in the Rogers character.
You haven't seen the Buddy Rogers Pat O'Connor match, then, have you?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen that one.
Have you and Johnny or Kelly? Yeah. How about you guys? Yeah, you see a load of Flair in that match with Buddy Rogers and stuff, don't you?
That's like that one match from the time that is everywhere.
Yeah,
you know,
Comiskey Park. I mean, it's
I'm interested as we watch more, and I'm sure we'll watch more Rogers matches on the next show that we do. But that's one of the things I'm going to look out for is just how much I guess you can credit Rogers for the NWA champ style that we see years later. I guess because he was the NWA champ at this point, right?
Yeah, he was actually the U.S. champ at this point, but he was actually introduced as the NWA champion. But that was a mistake. I wasn't gonna talk about this, but I started the match, and then when he introduced him as NWA champ, I knew the date. Right. This match was April 14th, 1961, and being the wrestling geek I am, I knew that the match with O'Connor at Comiskey Park wasn't until later in the year, and it was actually June 30th. 1961. So I knew he couldn't have been the NWA champ. Needless to say, I went on like a half hour online search of various sites trying to determine what belt that actually was that he had.
I gotta say, Johnny and I have been doing our Star Wars trilogy, and you are officially our R2-D2 just spewing out information.
Oh, no.
Barb is through C-3PO with the accent.
The gay robot?
Yeah. I'll give you, you're Han Solo, I'm Luke Skywalker, I guess.
Okay. No, I was just about, for Kelly, for that, I was about to lead a ECW-style chant for you. He's hardcore. He's hardcore.
Yeah, Kelly, that's damn impressive, sir.
It's actually, and what's interesting is this is the belt. It was the Chicago version of the United States title. And if you know your history, there were several United States titles over the years.
if we know our history.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is for the listeners.
No, and the belt was great because the front plate is America.
America, yeah.
Like off a map. You know, it was the shape of the country.
Okay. And so the Chicago U.S. belt was the original one. It was created for Vern Gagne. It was created for Vern as like a belt to have because he wasn't going to get the NWA belt, right? And Fred Kohler was backing Vern and couldn't get – there was a falling out, and Fez in the NWA went to another promoter, I believe, in Chicago. So anyway, Kohler created the U.S. belt for Gagne, and then so this eventually worked its way to Buddy, and so this is the Chicago U.S. belt, and it becomes the first WWWF title.
Does it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because I believe, yes, he still had this physical title.
Wow.
Because when he never lost the U.S. title. It was actually stripped from him.
I thought he won it in Rio.
Well, yeah. The legend, or so the legend goes. But anyway, he never lost this belt. It was stripped from him, and O'Connor, actually, ironically, was awarded it after, like 2 months after he lost the NWA title to Buddy. And so he never got that belt. Buddy kept this belt, I guess. And when the WWF was created, this was the first WWF title, because I guess it was just kicking around. It was like, well, if you need a belt, I have this old US title in the drawer, Vince.
Do you know if Bruno held that belt?
Yes. Yep, there's pictures if you look. Well, from the night of him beating Buddy, this is the belt that he's awarded. Wow. And he had it. I'm not sure when it went, when they changed it. They changed it by the mid 60s. They changed the design.
But and I've seen pictures of Bruno wearing this belt. Yeah.
Bruno wears it, and the belt was lost for decades. And you may have read about this in the last, I think it was a couple of years. It finally turned up in like the attic of an old wrestler. At the moment, I can't remember who. And after he died, they found it. It's a long.
I heard about that. Now it's in the WWE's possession.
Maybe. I'm not sure where it went. You would think that they probably bought it, but yeah, it was lost for years, and it was like the typical story of it being in somebody's attic all that time. Yeah,
but Barry Darso's attic. Repo Man.
Yeah, the Repo.
Now I want to get back to your point there, Parv. Though.
Yeah.
I watching the Fez match. I thought that was more prototype NWA touring champion style.
Sure. No. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a few talking points there. Yeah. But I guess one of my points of interest is in watching more Rogers is just how much of Rogers is picked up by later workers, especially Flair, but also guys like Race, etc. Because we're getting to fill in the picture a bit more here, and with Thayer's as well. The other thing I wanted to say real quick is that ring announcer is prone to making an error or two, isn't he? Because he makes a couple as we'll find out later. But that was very interesting. Any other points on this on Rogers or Haystack Calhoun before we move on to the second match?
Well, I just wanted to point out this, and this isn't about the match, though. Two things. Number one, when you say filling in the gaps, that's what's going to happen a lot with this stuff, because there's a lot of, like we used to always say, you know, preconceived notions about stuff that I love seeing get torn apart, because there was a lot of preconceived notions that Buddy Rogers, based on the footage that we had, wasn't really that great. You know, in a lot of, smart fan circle all's eyes, well, already I think that's been proven wrong. And I can't wait to see more be proven wrong. And also for me personally, with this being restored and looking like this, I am such a sucker for 1950s television myself. And everything about this is just—it is. Well, it's the 50s, and it's just.
Well, you
dripping.
Grew up in the era. I mean.
Okay. Okay. Good one. Good one. Good one. But like they used to on the game show channel, on Sunday nights they used to have Sunday night flashbacks to where like for like 9 o'clock on, all they showed was 1950s game shows with all the original advertising. And I would just watch that like in a marathon. And this is also, it's just, even if, and I see why this was restored and put up there, not so much because of wrestling fandom, but because let's get a taste of what television was like in the golden age of television. And wrestling was such a huge part of the golden age of television that it deserves to be part of the conversation on the history of the medium. And this just and I personally, I just love everything about it. The way Russ talks, the look of the crowds, you know, the cadence of everyone's speech being on television, this new medium. I think this just is wonderful. I'm so excited. I'm like binge watching this stuff already. So this is just so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, let's move on to the main course then. That was our little starter. The main course is Vern Gagne taking on the NWA champ Lou Thesz. What year was this one from? Anyone know?
Yes, I do. And this was another thing that I researched and got to the bottom of in the last day.
Sherlock.
Yes, I'm Sherlock Holmes. It's from 1952, and so I was looking, because the date wasn't on it, obviously, so I had to go on Wrestling Data, a trusty site that I've used many times for the jobber bios. And so basically I came down to two matches in 1952 that they had in Chicago, and both were one-hour draws. So based on the comments by Russ Davis in this match where he basically implies it's the first time they've wrestled in Chicago, right? So I'm guessing that it's the earlier of the two in 1952, which would be January 25th, 1952, to be precise.
Top notch work there, Kelly.
Yes, sir. Way to go, Part 2, D2.
I'm not Chief J historian for nothing.
Yeah, well, you're bringing it tonight.
You are. Sure. Okay, the new footage is like, you must got like a shot of like
I know.
Or something, you know?
Oh, yes.
Totally. He's been waiting for a new challenge, and
yeah,
just,
I know.
Yep.
Just in the nick of time, it arrives.
Yeah, Kelly didn't mention he was the one who actually found the belt in the attic.
Yes.
So any comments about the general presentation, Johnny, going into this match?
Well, apparently Rudy Hoffman has the market cornered on cornermen in the Chicago area, because Rudy himself is the cornerman for Thesz. And Russ points out that the cornerman for Gagne was also a Hoffman guy. So he wins no matter what.
You want to talk about hair? That dude had amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's – okay. And before – I noticed this halfway through the match, looking at Vern with hair, and I'm going – and he's young, and he is and he's good looking.
Yep.
And – I'm thinking, what does this remind me of? What am I not seeing? It took me halfway through this Broadway. This match is basically the Odd Couple in the ring. It is Jack Lemmon versus Walter Matthau.
Nice.
Because Vern is a dead ringer for young Jack Lemmon, except with muscles. And Thesz is remarkably similar looking to Walter Matthau.
You're right. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Dun 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 dun. So it blew my mind. But I looking into the crowd, it looks like when you the shot of just the guys in the front row was like the cast of 12 Angry Men came to the wrestling match.
It was.
Yeah, let's talk about the crowd for a second. People don't even dress this nice to go to work nowadays. And these guys are looking this good and going to the matches. It's amazing.
Looking at the crowd was an indictment on the casualization that took place during the 1960s, I think. Casualization of just general culture.
Yeah, there's no you can't see me t-shirts or any of that shit.
I like the idea that you just like dress up to leave the house.
Yeah.
You know? I'll wear a seat to go out.
I'm sure people up in the cheap seats maybe weren't wearing this. And Vern is fast. I know, because all we've ever seen of Vern really is watching a guy who is way too old to be kicking ass in the AWA, but he's their old man ass kicker, so it works. This is a good-looking young guy with a great body, and he's fast. Or I mean, he's that stupid old Jim Ross, Bill Watts saying, but it's true. He's like, he's not fast, he's sudden.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you get some great lines from Russ as they were doing an arm lock. And he says, you could tell that it's hurting Vern's arm because his arm's white. And he goes, Vern's arm is as white as a fresh-picked lily. And I'm like, damn. Oh, that's beautiful. He's a poet. And he says about the both of them, they're both in beautiful shape, as pretty as they've ever been. And yes, they are. Very. Lou playing subtle heel at first because I've always said about baby face versus baby face matches or whatever. You know, I need someone to play bad guy, at least somewhat. And Vern, being the hometown hero, ain't going to be that guy. And so Fez is working, traveling champion, rough and tumble veteran, and he'll cheat a little bit.
He was booed from the start, though.
They shook hands and everything, and he slowly was getting frustrated, and he was resorting to roughhousing.
I noticed that he went the first time, like, he was booed right at the start of the match, and and Russ said, "Yeah, Luis Fez is no stranger to being booed." No, he's used to getting booed as champion type thing, which actually, like, I didn't know that Fez were, because, well,
yeah, me neither.
We'll talk more about it, but he was
one of the things he says, he goes, like, Fez likes to keep his opponent having tiger eyes, and which, hey, God, it was like, his whole thing is, if I can make you mad by with his cool little hit my own fist to knock my elbow into your face. You know, when the ref ain't looking, his moves, that a guy gets angry, he'll make a mistake and he can capitalize on it because he's Lou Fez.
You know who Lou reminded me of throughout that match? Because, I mean, he did so many cheap shot rope break things. He reminded me of, like, a subtle Jimmy Breaks. Breaks was the master of the cheap shot off a rope break. But it was overtly, you know, it was, you know, 70s and 80s wrestling, so it was a lot overt. This is so more subtle, but freaking awesome.
Well, Pete, why don't you break the match down for us, and then we can have a more general conversation about it.
This is 2 out of 3 falls, Fez versus Ganya. It was nice to hear the announcer actually refer to Vern being, actually called Vern Young. We have a young Vern Gagne here, so that was a nice little thing.
He's only 25.
Yeah, exactly. Full of hair. We get a feeling out process to start. They roll on the mat with some rope breaks. Fez is definitely playing subtle heel here. Fez has a head scissors on Gagne, and Gagne's keeping it active by trying to escape. And it's really, really, really interesting. They're working it really good here. And finally, it pays off. And Vern grabs a hammerlock and takes Fez down, and Gagne's just cranking it. Fez attempts a headlock counter, and we get to a rope break. Because this is being presented as, like, real grappling, you see just a shitload of rope breaks throughout this match. And it makes sense in the sense, like, you know, in Pride or whatever, it's Japanese shoot fighting, rope breaks were important and stuff, and here you'll see it throughout. Gagne's back to a sweet hammerlock. We get another rope break and another, and then Fez pops Vern in the ear, and it's breaking down a little here now. There's a nice little ankle pick by Vern, and is working a toe hold. Fez tries I stole the announcer's terminology here because I thought it was sweet. Fez tries a chin press to no avail. Now he's going for a face grip, again, straight from Russ Davis's mouth. And Vern just cranks the toe hold. Now Lou has a hammerlock with Vern, while Vern has the toe hold. So they both have technically submission holds they're working here. Fez in control, but Fez ends up winning out with the hammerlock. Fez is real vicious, working the hammerlock and trying to counter. And then he's trying to cauliflower Vern's ears at the same time. You see him just, like, rubbing his knees or his legs over Vern's ears at the same time, which is causing more pressure him having problems thinking. We get a ref break because of Fez's choke. Fez punches Vern's ear on a rope break again. We get this hammerlock by Lou and Vern, and now in payback, nice little payback spot, Vern pops his ear. Fez hits an elbow on a rope break again. Oklahoma roll by Vern that he turns into a knee lock, and we get a rope break. Vern with a standing headlock and takes Lou down. To the mat, Vern is cranking that bad boy. They go standing, and Vern brings him back down. This is pretty interesting stuff. Just working that headlock. Vern cranking some more. Fez is just selling his shoulder, which would seem out of place a little bit. Vern controlling Lou with the headlock. Finally, Lou escapes, but gets caught back immediately. Now Vern is using the headlock for pinning attempts. Big time belly to back, and out of nowhere, we get a big time belly to back suplex from Fez for the three. I mean, it was amazing. And that was for the first fall, and it looked like the announcer fucked the ring announcer fucked it up. I thought it was only a one fall match, but Russ Davis saves his ass on announcing, and I mean that was just sick. Pretty much enough leading up, it was pretty much Vern just controlled that whole entire controlled most. I'd say he probably took 80% of that first fall until Fez nails that just freaking a massive suplex and stuff.
Yeah. Almost broke Vern's neck.
I mean it was like a legitimate like Japanese style.
That was his finisher. That was the Greco-Roman backdrop.
Yeah,
that's what gave him Alzheimer's eventually. Was that fucking drop? Jesus.
Then we're starting number two. We get some healing by Lou to start the second fall. I really love that subtle healing where it's not overtly, but man, it gets the crowd hot. And I guess that's how you have like when you have rules and you enforce them, you don't have to do a whole lot to get heat. And all he's doing is little subtle healing that's just getting it. We get a big slam by Vern for a two, a hip toss, and Lou goes for the sleeper. I mean, Lou goes there. Fez is so great at the little chin lock spots, chicken shit spots where he's just fucking popping them off the ropes. Vern returns the favor. Sleeper, but Fez is in the ropes. Breaking a knee lift by Lou, followed by a Fez press. That marker made me mark out a little bit.
Yeah, me too. I popped for that.
Yeah. Body scissors by Fez, and we have he gets a Lou buzz, a broad arm to escape.
I couldn't believe he kicked out with a Fez press.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I was shocked too. You thought it was going to be the finish, but I'm like, there's no way he's going 2-0 on this. Kanye keeps going for the sleeper. But every time he does, it's just too close to the ropes. Lou with a toe hold, rolling leg lock by Vern. Ooh, Fez gets the rope. Crowd is so sympathetic into Vern for all the cheap shots that Lou does to him. And then Fez is offering him a hand, and Vern is like, "Fuck you!" slammed by Vern and the Gone Sleeper to even it up 2-2. There's been a lot of headlock work in here. And the announcer actually makes sense of it by saying, hey, man, this is the setup the guy in his sleeper. So it's making sense. But I'll even say the headlock spots are dragging a little. But overall, they're executed really well, and the presentation makes up for it a little bit, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And then pretty much we go to the third fall, and time expires and stuff. It was really interesting stuff. It's hard for me to give it a star rating because I'm not going to, because I want to get more of a feel for the time frame before I start doling out chiclets and stuff. But I really enjoyed the work. I mean, Fez's cheap shit, chicken shit, subtle healing was so subtle and so good. But he got his point across. I can see people getting kind of uninterested in the headlock because they worked it. I mean. They worked the headlock long, but they kept it active. But it could have been done. The headlock work could have been a little bit better done. But I thought it was really well done. I thought the match was excellent.
Kelly,
yeah, I thought this was like a great matchup. You know, as far as Fez being the rough, no nonsense vet, and Gagne was the plucky young stud athlete that was the hometown boy, right? He was a Midwestern kid from Minnesota and Chicago. I've seen a bit of Fez from the 50s. Gagne, I don't think I've seen any before.
Last so night, weird to see him as such a young man.
Yeah, maybe little bit clips on like historical documentaries and stuff. But so this was a revelation. And Fez, like Pete said, I mean, I just... for me, the first thing that stood out for this match for me was the subtle heel work of Fez. I don't think I've seen it done better ever. What a master. I mean, I don't think I understood Fez as a wrestler at all until last night. And now I kind of get what he was. He was the champ, and you had to beat him. And he wasn't good or bad. He was just
the champ.
He was the best.
Yeah.
The best. He was the best.
I don't know about you. It has changed my... Because I don't know. I always thought of Fez as being a very, very technical wrestler.
Yeah.
In terms of like mat work and whatnot. And he does do that stuff. But I mean, I don't know, but like I thought he was he's just nasty.
Yeah, he's got an edge to him.
So nasty. I mean, it's not like he's just working a headlock. He's fucking punching him in the ear, punching him in the face as he's doing it. And then when the ref is away, you'll get like a little cheap shot into the ribs and really, really nasty. And it kind of like you said, Kenny, it's masterful work, really.
Because I think Fez's healing in here kept the match really interesting because, honestly, with all the headlock work, it could have died a slow death. But it was because Fez kept on, boom, boom, throwing those like slaps or a little up in the ear. Just little things. But it made everything work. I just made it. It's hard to explain, but it made it work because of that. Because if that was just trying to play, I don't think they could have done like a game of chess. I don't think it would have worked. But what they were doing here was just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that's
Johnny.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Johnny. Is that the psychology in this was awesome? Everything meant something. Like everything. There was no wasted motion, no wasted spots. Everybody, both these guys were working, for the full 60 minutes. And Gagne with the headlock, he worked that really well, I thought. And I was into it. I mean, that's how you work a headlock. It wasn't a rest hold. That wasn't a rest hold. Those guys were, Gagne was sweating buckets working that
headlock. Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He worked that fucking headlock. That was awesome.
And just to that point, Kelly, I mean, the psychology was such as that when they actually hit that suplex at the end of that first fall, it really meant something.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, that's called a high spot.
That was a true high spot. Yeah, like economical use of a high spot right there, if I've ever seen one. It was just fabulous. I loved that first fall. The first fall was awesome.
I jumped out of my chair. I was, damn. He looked like he crushed him.
Any further thoughts, Johnny?
I just real quick. The finish also, it was not just that the time ran out. The time ran out while Vern had the sleeper.
Had the sleeper on, yeah, my bad.
On Fez. So it's the class. I mean, that's a finish that's been used forever. You know, that's
Luger Flair Bash 88.
I was thinking Morocco Rocky Johnson at the Spectrum. Yeah, yeah. You know, and you're like, oh, he would have won it if he just had 10 more seconds.
Yeah,
that's so great to send that crowd with for their hometown hero. And the other cool thing about the healing work done by Fez is, like I said, it wasn't because he was a chicken shit who couldn't wrestle. It wasn't because he's evil. It wasn't because he felt outmatched and had to resort to cheating. It was just his way of, being a rugged veteran who is the champ. Yep. And this young guy who's full of piss and vinegar, he's going to have to fucking... Now you're facing the champ, because you had that with Vern. Vern was like, he's such a nice, good, clean-cut kid that when he does finally resort... to balling up his fists, when then Fez would be like, hey, ref, come on, he's got his fist.
Come
on, unball those.
I gotta watch this again. That's a great match.
It's where he does that stuff where he's playing mind games with Vern with his cheating tactics, not because he needs to cheat to beat him, but you are now entering the big league of what is to take on the champ. And I'm going to fuck with your head and get you mad. So, like I said, so you make a mistake. And then, but again, how great, because it happened a bunch of times. He does something. Vern's got his fist balled up. And Fez is like, hey, wait, hey, come on, ref. Tell him to unball those fists. We're going to wrestle, right? He even does the handshake spot. Hey, Fez... I've seen some Fez, and I always used to be like, oh, he was kind of boring. I love him now. I love Vern now. This, yeah. You know, it gives you an idea of, like, you can't judge guys based on what you saw when they were 60, you know, and then proclaim it. And that's what's wonderful about this footage coming out. We're seeing these guys as young guys. And, wow, they deserve their reputations. I love this line. He was knocked 7 different ways from Kelsey's house. I was like, that's awesome. I'm using that in my life from now on. The body slam bump that Fez takes, he bounces like 2 feet in the air. Like, this was just like he landed on fire. You know, just boom. Oh, and then when he's like making Vern go back so he can do some back stretches to get his back in alignment. That's the best subtle. You're like, hey, get him back. I need to stretch my hip here. Okay, I'm ready to go. I loved this so much. Last night, I was having so much fun between the greatness of the match, Russ Davis being now on my top 5 list of favorite announcers ever, and I've only been exposed to him for 48 hours. The feeling of the 50s and the 50s style television, and it's not all grainy, and it looks perfect, and this is a treasure trove, and this match is people have been saying, wow, Lou Thesz faced Vern Gagne once, that's a dream match. Well, we didn't know the details of, at the time, is young Vern Gagne versus grizzled veteran Lou Thesz. And, you know, the story that this tells is just amazing. And the match itself is fantastic. And even all those headlocks, you know, you're going to do an hour Broadway, you're going to have headlocks, you know, basically. And, they were doing the pumping of the headlock, you know, and the grinding. And
even Vern was doing like a jumping up and down headlock.
Yeah, I love this.
Also punching in the face, or like really not like that's a, like nasty. Like I can only say it like the way he was laying those shots in. There was a level of brutality there that I just didn't expect to see from Lou Thesz.
Me neither.
But I think to your point, Johnny, I don't think I've ever seen it done as well as that. I mean, it makes it kind of weirdly makes later heel rule breaking look really kind of overblown and obvious.
Amateurs, because
like the way Thesz it is character work in general was really good, because you got that kind of like he's playing mind games, he's begging, you know, it's not begging, like, cause I heard somebody wrote on the forum before that Thesz basically worked like a kind of bitching NWA champ, like he wasn't really what? Like somebody wrote that on the forum before. I'm not going to say who.
I know what you're talking
about. But it's not that character.
No.
He's playing a mind game, and then in other parts of the match it's like he gets this look in his eye, and it's like, are you really going to try to fuck with me here, kid? You know, I'm
Lou
Thesz.
Are you going to try me? Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a really kind of like, you know, don't fuck with me here, because I am going to take you out type thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like amazed. Like, I thought it was really, really good character work, which is the last thing I thought I'd be saying of a Lou Thesz match.
Exactly. And he's not, there's nothing wrong with your, you know, evil heel stuff. You have it here. I watched a Mr. Moto match earlier, you know. It's, you know, that kind of cheating has always been around. He wasn't a heel, though. That's just it. He was beyond the...
He was the champ, yeah.
The champ. He was beyond the level of bad guy.
He wasn't a gimmick. He was legit, you know?
You know what
we sound like, guys? Sound like a bunch of kids opening their presents on Christmas morning.
I know, doesn't it? It's awesome.
Y'all have a giddiness to it right now.
Yeah, because it's fresh. It's fresh.
I'm so pumped to watch Thesz Rogers. We have to cover Thesz. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I haven't watched it yet, but
there's two of them.
There's two.
One's 30 or 40 minutes, and then there's an hour draw.
Now, I'm pumped to talk about some Mighty Atlas. That guy's fucking awesome.
There's a Sicilians match from 1960.
I saw that. I watched it.
Yeah.
Actually, from the same card as Haystacks. buddy, actually.
I'll give you the teaser on this. The Sicilians, Lou Albano and Tony Altomare, thin, mind you, and they are dressed like fucking mafioso, but only but only the hats and the jackets and no pants.
It's awesome.
Donald Duck.
And with this pencil thin mustaches, they really look like something out of The Godfather. Because apparently they were like, I don't know how much this is bullshit or not, but they were threatened by the real mob.
Yeah, in Chicago.
To knock it off. Yeah.
Awesome. any other stuff you want to mention before we wrap things up here? This was kind of our, teaser trailer, really, but, I'm excited to see all of it, really.
Me too.
Ditto, yeah.
More Luthers, definitely, is something I want to see.
Yeah,
part of me just wants to put the WWF project on hold for till we can do all this. I think spices of variety helps. Keeps us fresh.
Variety is the spice of life.
There you go.
That's what she said.
All right, guys. Well, hopefully join us in a week or so where we'll be back with more 1950s stuff. Bye, everyone.
Laters.
Later.